The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And some of you may be wondering, what year is this? Is this late 90s or the early 2000s? That's the old open to the Feinbaum Show. And the reason I mention that is that we are going back in time. All the people that call in the program and complain about how it's not as good as it used to be, I get it. But the man who really created this program is our guest. And I think this may be the easiest interview of my career, because I have nothing to say, and I'm going to let him do all the talking. Pat Smith joins us, who for, I don't know, more than 20 years ran this program. And it is so great to have you on, Pat. And Mark Kubiak and I were talking the other day, and he suggested that we ought to go old school for all the new school haters.
Oh, my goodness. No, hey, listen, thanks for having me, Paul. We precede you here in Birmingham, so, you know, I'm sorry about the lead-in that we give you here in Birmingham.
But it's pretty good.
No, it's great to talk to you, and it's great to hear that music again, because it's kind of a running joke at Jocks, because obviously I'm friends with Taylor Hicks. I think he does a great job for your show, but when that music comes on, it's just, to me, it's just not the Paul Feinbaum Show. So, you know, when I hear it, they turn it up real loud because they know it kind of gets under my skin. So, but no, I'm glad Marco reached out, and always happy to talk.
Yeah, Pat is the program director at WJOX, and of course he's part of
now
the three man.
Hold on, Paul. Hold on. You're going to get me in trouble. I'm assistant PD and co-host, because our good friend Ryan Haney is the program director.
I am always thinking ahead, but I apologize. But I'm always trying to do things that I'm not supposed to be doing. But it's really good to have you.
I remember those days.
And I want to go back, because I ended up moving to a station where I think you were an intern, but it wasn't too long after that you became a producer on the program. And I'm going to let you kind of tell the story of how all of that ended up to where we are now.
Oh, wow. kind of a Cliff Notes version, huh? Well, basically, like you said, you were at another radio station. I think your contract had come up, and you had looked elsewhere, and I happened to be at a news talk station, which the sports talk show followed Rush Limbaugh's program, and all of a sudden, you showed up along with Bob Lockamy at the radio station on that fateful, I think it was a Friday night after we had done a show, and then just so happens, you guys came on the air on Monday. I happened to be at the right place at the right time, and I was finishing up school at UAB, and you know, you and I developed a quick relationship, and decided from that point in time to kind of try to take the show to the next level. And a few years later, we're able to get syndicated throughout the state of Alabama, and then from there, obviously SiriusXM, and then ultimately ESPN, and where you are today at the SEC Network. So just very blessed to be a part of it from day one.
I want to go back to that moment where we were on the affiliate, the station in Birmingham, and you really started thinking, bigger picture. I was at the time doing local television. I was still writing a newspaper column, so I wasn't that forward thinking. But you thought the show could go beyond that area, and What was so interesting about it is that once it did, there were a lot of people that thought your idea was insane.
No, you're right. And it's so hard and difficult to tell people about this, because I remember, Paul, when the fax machine became, you know, a prevalent thing in offices, and I'll never forget when we started getting stuff faxed to us, like before you came to the radio station, because typically you would either be at the newspaper finishing up a column, or you'd stop by a TV station, then you'd come into the radio show, and people around the Southeast would be faxing us newspaper articles because we didn't have internet. Internet was not invented yet. And so it was fascinating for us to be able to get information from outside of the state of Alabama. And so that kind of opened up some different topics that we could do on the show. And then one day I started thinking, well, you know what? People outside of Birmingham, we're on a 5,000 watt AM radio station, and more people need to hear this program, because we're inundated by voicemails, and people, you know, would communicate with us any way they could and tell us how much they loved the show and wanted more of the show. And so at the time was able to go to management and pitch the idea of potentially getting on a few stations in the state of Alabama, and that just kind of steamrolled. And for many, many years, we kept adding stations, and up to one point, we had, I believe, in the mid-30s before we got on Sirius XM. So it was just it was a great time in radio, and we were very fortunate to have the people that believed in us, just like you believed in the idea. So it went well.
And I'm going to come back to some of the early stories, but I think for, and I want you to comment on this. I'll never forget. I was in Pasadena. Where actually it was Newport, for the Rose Bowl national championship game between Alabama and Texas. And because of, an illness in your family with, I think your wife's mother or something, you weren't able to make the trip. And correct. You called me out there, and you told me that you had gotten a call from somebody at Sirius XM. And I really, I thought you were kidding, because they wanted to run the show as a regular in an afternoon time slot. And I want you to go back to that moment, because that there was a buzz around our crew at the time. And we, I don't know, we have a fairly big crew now because of television and radio. I don't know if it matches the number of people that you had working for you at that particular moment in time, because there were producers, there were assistant producers, there were dedicated phone screeners that had their right. own contracts, but
they did.
But that I mean, would you agree that was the moment that things really started to change?
No, there's no question about that. And I'm glad that you wanted me to tell about this side of the story, because I thought you were going to publicly remand me again for putting you outside the Rose Bowl at a outside party.
I'll get to that in a minute.
With music playing. Okay. I was right. I got a call out of the blue, someone that I had never heard of before. And they just said, you know, we love the show. We want to talk to you about this show going, you know, nationwide. Sirius XM, would you guys be interested in that? And I was like, are you kidding me? Absolutely. And then I remember calling you in Pasadena and said, you'll never believe this phone call. And of course, a lot of times, like you would, whether I'd call you and say, hey, we got this coach on today, or we got this happening today, or whatever the case may be, you know, you kind of would, you know, I could picture you rolling your eyes going, yeah, whatever, you know. But then it finally sunk in a little bit, you know, once I told you exactly the full conversation. And I think at that point in time, you realized that we had a bigger entity on our hands than we thought we did back then.
And because of that, and a lot of things started to happen after that, and we'll get to the Harvey Updike situation, but it really did open the show to a lot broader audience. I know, you know, this is, I mean, streaming was going on, Pat, if I remember, but I mean, it was not easy to stream a radio show back then.
No, it wasn't. It had to go through a lot of hoops. You know, we had it on the local radio station website. And then at the time, we teamed up with AL.com. AL.com right. came to us, and they wanted to start streaming the show themselves off their website, in which we did that. And then at the time, you had a television partnership with Fox 6 here in Birmingham.
Right.
And then Fox 6 ended up putting cameras in our studio. And we used to send interns and phone screeners in during commercial breaks, because Fox 6 would not cut to commercials because the technology just wasn't there yet. And so we'd actually have the interns and other people go in there and dribble basketballs, or basically do intermission tricks to try to keep people entertained during commercial breaks, because as soon as we went to break, you would find yourself out of the studio because you didn't want to be on camera any longer than you had to. So that's kind of how we all built it up. I mean, it was very difficult trying to get it streamed. And then once that happened, then the way the technology kept developing, it kept making it easier for us to get it to the largest amount of people that we possibly could.
Yeah. The only person I think doing it at the time was Rush Limbaugh. He had his program, he called it the Ditto Cam, and it was streamed. We're going to go back and do some greatest hits, but I am curious, though, because I'm not curious. I mean, I think maybe the audience is curious. Just in terms of, you know, because the show gets so much criticism, or got so much criticism back in the day, because they you know, the criticism was simply we pit the two fan bases against one another. Is that true?
Right. Hello, I think my phone's cutting out. Did you answer your question,
yes.
Paul? I'll just say this. So many times you and I would be sitting in a press box somewhere, and no matter what of course, this was before, you know, Nick Saban came to Alabama, and we would literally look at each other in the press box, and on a certain drive, we look at each other and said, okay, do they need to score here? What's going to be better for the show on Monday? And that really is the way that we approached it every weekend. It wasn't like we were for Alabama or for Auburn. It was like, hey, you know, what's going to make for the best conversation? You know, what's going to make for the most amount of phone calls on Monday? Or, you know, who can we have fun with next week? And that's kind of how we approached it each week. It wasn't like, oh, Paul hates Alabama, Paul hates Auburn. No, we were an equal opportunity hater. It just depended on what program was up and what program was down.
Pat Smith with us, and what we're doing here is—I've never done this before—is do a quick 30 for 30 on the program that we are part of. But I think it's interesting, and I think the people that are listening, especially the radio viewers, you know, are curious about, you know, the behind the scenes of a radio program, and, you know, the evolution of one. Pat will continue to join us, and we will. We'll go back in some of the greatest moments of the show's history. Usually these are shows you do at the end of a run. So anyway, if for some reason we get canceled tomorrow, we've already got this one in the can. Pat Smith joining us when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Welcome back. Pat Smith with us, who helped create this program that you're currently listening to. We'll get back to some of the greatest hits in a minute, Pat, and ultimately open the phone lines. But I am really curious, as someone who started in this industry at such a young age, and you've really seen it all, and of course now not only the assistant program director at WJOX, which is considered you know, at the very top in sports radio, as far as, you know, perhaps the preeminent sports station in the country, and you also are part of Three Man Front, the show that precedes us in Birmingham. Just the change of this medium. So many people have been paying tribute this week to Rush Limbaugh. His show evolved since he began it until recently when he left it. But how would you say from the early 90s when we first came together, or to now, how has the medium changed?
Well, You know, mainly, obviously, it's now become kind of an a la carte listening. I mean, it's in which the audience now has 24/7 access, just like you do for your favorite teams. That's how people now are able to consume the audio that we produce every day. You know, that was one of the things that obviously when we wanted to launch the network was trying to get it out to as many people as we possibly could. And that's the way that radio has now been transformed into a medium in which people, whether you've got a busy schedule, they can download a podcast to be able to listen to it when they're on their way to work the next day, or they're working out, or they want to go home, be with their families, and then be able to listen to it when it's at their convenience. But that's, to me, that's been the biggest change. And, you know, one thing that we tried to do on FineBomb back in those early days is trying to make the program relevant when we're not on the air. And that's what we try to do, and that's what we've kind of been able to do extremely well with Ryan Haney's leadership down here in Birmingham at WJOX, is being able to make sure that the 4 hours that we have every day, that just because the show goes off the air, that does not mean that that's when people will automatically stop listening and 20 hours later they're going to come back to your program. You need to do things to make your name, make your program relevant in the off hours. And so I think that's the biggest key now to a lot of radio stations, is trying to find that happy medium in which you can do both on the air and then when you're off the air, to be able to give the listener what they want.
And as great as things are today, I will say there is a certain sadness about the way it used to be, because when this program came on, I think Limbaugh and a number of other shows were the same way. People could, you know, they were counting down the minutes because they really had, I mean, the internet had not even really, it was in its embryonic stage. Twitter had not been invented. So you had to tune in to find out what was going on.
There's no question. I'll never forget, Paul, when we had to convince our program director at the time when we were on the News Talk station. And again, Rush Limbaugh was our lead in. And Terry Bowden, you had gotten the information that Terry Bowden was going to be fired at Auburn. And we had to walk into our program director's office and convince him to take Rush Limbaugh off the air, at least for us to break in and to tell the world that Terry Bowden had been fired at Auburn. We actually had to go and try to convince the program director for us to be able to do that at our News Talk station. And we interrupted Rush Limbaugh to do that. So, yeah, the world before the internet, it really was must-hear radio when we came on the air every day, because, I mean, before we even came on the air, a lot of times you probably didn't even know, but maybe we had seven or eight people already on hold. As soon as Rush Limbaugh would play, you know, his last bumper music, then all of a sudden, you know, people would start getting in line. And then when we went over to WJOX and got on FM off the AM, it was the same thing. When the roundtable was getting ready to go off the air, you know, we had a bunch of people already on hold, ready to go and listen to the show. So that's the one thing that I'm the most proud of what we did, Paul, is being able to give a voice to the fan. And I think you continue to do that at ESPN. I was sitting in those meetings with you in Bristol when we first went to ESPN, and telling them how important it was that we just could not lose that fabric of what we had established, and that was what made the show so great.
Pat Smith with us. And Pat's also the thing that has probably we've been the most criticized for here, because a lot of people just don't think this is good radio. I will tell you, I was with Tony Kornheiser a couple of years ago in Washington, D.C., and I won't use the language that he used, but I mean, he basically said, why do you talk to those people? And I bring this back to you because, we had guests and some of them were quite good, but the callers made the show.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there were plenty of times that we would have a plan. We would try to execute that plan throughout the day. And then once the show got kicked off, there were numerous times that you would call me into the studio and we would have a topic that would just be exploding. And all of a sudden, it didn't matter if somebody I worked on for a week and a half, 2 weeks to try to get on the show or try to talk them into coming on the show, because they were scared to come on because they figured that you were going to ambush them and ruin their career. So, you know, I had to kind of finesse them to come on the air. And if we had something hot going, you know, you always wanted to defer to the fan, to the caller. And so there were plenty of times we had to call an audible and cancel a guest, because obviously, you know, having that fervor, having that fan being able to talk on the radio and to help start that conversation on a daily basis was very important. And I think that's one of the things that made the show so great and to this day still makes it as good as it is.
I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but it was one of the most agonizing things I've ever gone through. In 2010, we had been contacted that a very, very prominent individual was considering doing one television interview and one radio interview when she came to Birmingham for her book tour, and I was negotiating, and I convinced them that we were the best station for it, even though we were a sports show. So for 2 weeks, I prepped like I have never prepped in my. I'm always aware of the guests, but I'm a little more like Larry King than some, where I want to ask questions like the audience would ask them, not like a Harvard PhD would, and. So finally, we announced the day before that on Thursday, in studio, we would be visited by Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State, and you know, one of the most prominent women in the world, and one of the most important people. and Pat, as you very well remember, late in the show on that Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Rumors started flying that, I'll let you tell the story, that Cam Newton was about to go down for Auburn.
Yep.
And
no, go ahead.
And we looked at each other, and I started thinking, oh, my goodness. And by the end of the night, the story continued to explode. And by the next morning, it was the biggest story in the entire country. And I'll go to the end of the story because we canceled Condoleezza Rice so we could talk about Cam Newton.
So we can talk about Cam. I know. And, you know, that's the beauty. Like that story, I mean, there's so many 6 degrees of famous people. I'll never forget we had an opportunity to play in the old Bruno's Pro-Am, Paul, and Rick Pitino was in our group, and it was a really great group.
Oh yeah.
And so towards the end of the round, Rick Pitino came up to us and apologized because he said that, you know, he was not as engaged as he probably should have, but I just want to let you guys know that it's probably going to come out that I'm going to be named the new head coach of the Boston Celtics. And you know, and we were sitting there going, that is so flipping cool. I mean, that is awesome. But he was more concerned about us being upset because obviously it was not the best experience of being in a pro-am with Rick Pitino. But you know, we had tons of those type interactions with people that was so very cool to be a part of the show.
Yeah, he was talking to his agent the entire round. I was stuck listening to Steve Spurrier complain about Rick Pitino's golf game. There's a lot more I want to get to. But there are just so many moments that you can't work any harder to book a guest. And I was probably the worst because the second a topic got going, I didn't care who the guest was. Nobody was more important than the caller.
Right. No, trust me. And I got it. I understood it. But, you know, again, that's the thing. Back then, you didn't have text messages. Email was just, you know, coming into its own. I would have to work the phones, get to voicemails most of the time. Then you had to wait for people to call back. And it's much easier now to send a text message and things of that nature to try to book people and get them on the show. But, yeah, back then I had to do a lot of negotiating and then have a call to Audible at the last second and like Condoleezza Rice and say, sorry.
Yeah, I don't remember how we, I think we came up with this jointly that we figured out a way to save face and we let her bow out, even though I was talking to her handler and he went to her and said that I think officially they told us they had to catch an earlier flight, even though I told the guys she's not
That's
on the
correct.
Show.
That is correct. Yes.
I have gotten to know her since then. I sat next to her at a table about whenever Alabama played in Tampa for the national championship, and I went over and we spent some time together. And one of these days, I'm going to have enough nerve to tell her the story.
Oh, that will be great. And before Happy to stay on as long as you want me, Paul. Before I go, I do want to tell you that Kerry Adams sends his best, and so does Mildred. I talked to Mildred earlier this afternoon.
Kerry Adams, I thought of him because you mentioned the Rose Bowl, and you set up this thing for us the day of the Alabama Rose Bowl. And we were in the parking lot there, and you had spent a lot of time working on it. It was very expensive. And some band came out right before we started doing it. Mm-hmm. And or maybe it wasn't, I can't remember if it was the band was going to come out later, and they started playing loud music. And I told Kerry, I said, tell this, I couldn't hear myself. I literally could not hear myself talk. So Kerry went over, very soft-spoken guy. And I said, Kerry, I'm going over there. And I'm at 138 pounds, I said, I'm going to throw this guy off the stage if he doesn't turn this thing down. And I think Kerry and I both went over it. I don't know how we did it, but I was physically ill. The music was so loud. Anyway, don't go anywhere, Pat. Yeah, if you can stick around. We haven't even gotten to some of the things I wanted to talk about. Pat Smith with us, who helped create this program. We are doing the greatest hits, and we'll get into some of those in a minute. What some of the moments that help shape what you are currently listening to right now. Back with more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We are back reminiscing about the good old days with Pat Smith, who was there at the beginning of this program. And Pat, I know you do a lot of interviews from time to time about not only what you do now, and I want to get to that in a second, but you know, people will ask you about your time on this program. And I'm going to take the Updike story out of the equation for a second because there's no getting around that. What other moments, because sometimes they're not the ones that people think they are. They're not the famous moments. They're not the Bowden getting fired or Updike. They're just callers. And, you know, whether I was looking at a book the other day, Roll Tide, War Eagle, but Rammer Jammer by Warren St. John. And right. He came up for the famous trial of Phyllis. I mean, those are the stories that it seems like, carry the most longevity, don't they?
No, there's no question about it. We were really the first ones really in our genre of talk radio. We would put callers on trial. We would have them come up and we would have an actual lawyer come in and we would prosecute you. Of course, you were the judge. And we would have people come in and they would state their case why they shouldn't be banned from the show. And then we'd have people that would present a defense and a prosecution. And so that was always fun. We were the first ones that before anybody else nationally started doing it, we would let the callers vote on the most attractive people in local television.
I can't believe we did it.
And of course, nowadays probably couldn't get away with that. But back then we could get away with that and some other things.
That was pretty popular.
Yeah, there were times that,
by the way.
Yeah, there were times that we knew. This is one of the biggest misnomers. And again, I don't know how it's run now, but I can just say for the 22, 23 years that I was a part of the show, we never gave a guest a backdoor phone number to get into the show. That was never allowed. It frustrated a lot of callers. A lot of the people that still call your show today, they begged, they would do anything for those hotline numbers, and we never did give them. They had to wait in line just like everybody else to get on. So that was something that people always thought was going on behind the scenes, and it didn't happen. But sometimes we would know that somebody might say something provocative on the air, and we would maybe push the envelope, and then maybe that person would step over that line, and then we'd have to hang up on them, and then perhaps they said something that we were able to bleep on air, but perhaps the people on hold could hear it. Because
I'll go ahead and I'll jump in on that story. There was a guy, Pat, I can't remember his name, but he called up every day and he accused a local and very prominent news person in town of having a relationship. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember who the person that it was it another news person?
Well, it would change. Sometimes it was the mayor of Birmingham, and then it would go to other people. We
played a game of Russian roulette.
It's a dangerous game, Paul.
The guy would call in, and he'd be talking about Alabama football, and then at the very end, he would slip in, and by the way, so-and-so is blanking so-and-so. And one day, and you wanted to be on hold so you could hear it. He called, I don't know, maybe once a week. And one day, what happened? We have a seven-second delay, and it didn't work.
Ed, that is correct. It did not work, and it went out over the air. And, of course, at the time, we were all like, oh, that's it. I mean, just go ahead and pack our bags.
This was legitimately the F word, for those of you wondering.
Yes, and I thought it's it. I had two young kids at home. I was done. You know, you still had the newspaper and and a current television. And,
well, that was going to help.
And so then what happened was it literally was a technical error. The delay had actually fried. It was such an old machine that it was. You know, everybody did what they were supposed to do to get rid of the call, except the actual technical item that was supposed to stop it from going to the transmitter. And so we were vindicated, but at that point in time, you and I realized that those days were gone. He was unofficially banned from the show.
In terms of callers, and you know, I know this is always a hard thing to do, but you know, I mean, and there's so, you know, so many guys, I'm thinking of Shane from Centerpoint off the top of my head, but you know, who we lost in 2011, but Tammy. I mean, there literally could be an entire show one day dedicated to the people that helped make this show. And I know you, there are so many iterations of that, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that I used to really enjoy doing every year is we would have a Christmas party. Where we'd go to a local eating establishment, and we would just invite, you know, about 20, 25 callers that, you know, basically helped make our show the kind of fun that we had each and every day. And that was so much fun because we were able to get, you know, one-on-one personalities with these guys, get to know them real well, and they became more of like a family. And it was kind of a fraternity and sorority with those callers to the show and those relationships that we developed with them. And then when you lose people like Tammy and you lose people like Shane, they're just good people. And that's one thing. It's one thing that you do on the radio for entertainment. But then when you really do get to know these people, they really were the salt of the earth and really, really good dudes and ladies to know.
And Pat, I would say I think those Christmas lunches helped develop what ended up being what held the show together, and that was the callers, because we did get to know them. And you know, then we ultimately would have this meeting every year in Huntsville, where I mean, I remember sitting in the car, and there's a picture of it somewhere, where I think Shane from Centerpoint, Phyllis from Mulga, I don't know if Tammy was in the car or not, but I think she was.
She was.
You know, Mount Rushmore Feinbaum show callers all sitting in the same car, and the stories that we heard, I will never forget.
No, you know, Roger Hallmark was a great composer.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Did a really great song about Bear Bryant that Phyllis knew a lot about for some reason. Some great stories about Coach Gene Stallings will never make it to the radio.
No, I mean, these are things that may make the documentary. But we had lunch one day, and Legend called earlier, and I didn't know much about Legend. But you know, he had a history that that he told us about on the air. He'd gone to jail for killing somebody, and
right.
And I said, yeah. So we went out to lunch with him and DJ K Dub. They were called the Sons of Saban at the time.
That's right.
And
yep.
I mean, we're sitting there, and I'm like, you know, the most inquisitive guy in the world. That just comes from my newspaper background, and legends telling us these stories about being in jail. And I kind of looked over to you, and you were turning white, or all kinds of shades of white. But I'm talking as I'm thinking, but Pat, I think that's, you know, it was the connection. And I've always said, you know, that you know, maybe it's changed, but you know, at least at that moment in time, no show in this country had ever had a connection to callers like this one.
No, they didn't. And another thing that when we would go out places, whether most of the time it was obviously to a football game, and you know, there was a lot of times that there were people that didn't particularly care for you.
No,
and there were situations where people would throw things. And then, you know, when we're on Bourbon Street, at, you know, covering national championship games and having to deal with that, or, you know, irate fans in airports and things of that nature. So, yeah, there was definitely an ugly side to it, but, obviously now with you at ESPN, I think they have a little bit better security than what we had back then with me and Kerry running around trying to run interference on what was going on. So
yeah, well, the most dangerous ever was we had a run of some really negative Auburn stuff, and I believe it was the 09 game. It may not have been, but I was trying to. I'd done a show with Rick Carley right outside the stadium, and I was trying to get in right at kickoff, and right where Tiger Walk had let out. And some guy just started screaming and hollering at me. And Legend and K-Dub literally saved my life. This guy was going to kill me.
Yes. Yeah, no. And also don't forget about the time that LSU fans took umbrage to some things that you said. And they obviously found your house on a new website called Google Earth. And they were able to disseminate pictures of your house from a satellite. And talking about the things that they wanted to do.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because a guy said on some website that I am going to kill him on Saturday night, yep. And he made the mistake of and he did a Google Earth of my house, and I looked at you, and you immediately turned it over to management, which turned it over to, I don't know whether it was the FBI or somebody, but I mean, they found the guy.
Yep, they did, and of course. And at that point in time, you had a security officer every night.
Oh, yeah.
When you walked out, was with you, and he would follow you down to Fox 6 and halfway home just to make sure nobody was following you.
Yeah, the guy was so bad, I could lose him at a red light. But anyway, well, we need to break, because I'm going to run out of time here. And before asking you about probably the most famous moment in the show's history, we'll come back with our final minutes with Pat Smith.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We're back with Pat Smith, and I know I'm going to run out of time before we get to Updike, but that story has been on documentaries. But Pat Smith with us. Pat, I just thought of something. You mentioned the caller feuds. We had one with the aforementioned Shane from Centerpoint and a guy named Bobby, and they came up and started debating. Shane had we were in a sixth floor of a building in Birmingham when we worked at 960, and Shane brought like an Alabama elephant or doll with him or something. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah, it was a big owl doll. Uh-huh, sure was.
So they got into a screaming match, and I think I threw this the doll at Shane in the middle of the interview. And then Shane, I'm trying to remember, did he back Bobby up to the wall? I thought he was going to kill him, in other words.
Yeah, he did. And Bobby didn't back down. And Shane literally did at that time. And then Shane just left the studio. Matter of fact, I had to go pull him out into the parking lot and try to negotiate to get Shane back into the studio, because he was so upset because his dog got broken.
But
so,
the biggest concern was, this guy Shane from Centerpoint was so upset, Pat, that I started thinking he is about to toss Bobby through the plate glass and he is going to die and my career will be, because I mean I was clearly instigating it. I mean there's no way I could have come off innocent.
No, you wouldn't have done that.
And then we've gone almost 50.
No, it was.
We've gone over 55 minutes. You went down there, but so did someone else. The first mention of Neil Vickers, who went down, or may have already been down there smoking a cigarette. He was our news guy.
Neil was already down there smoking. Matter of fact, when I got downstairs, him and Shane were sharing smokes together outside. So Neil was able to kind of calm him down. And then Shane went to his Mustang. And so I had to go over to his Mustang, and he had to have another cigarette. And so by the time he finished that one, I was able to finagle him back up to the 6-4. But yeah, it got extremely, extremely hairy.
What I'm trying to say is by the time we got to the Harvey Updike situation in January of 2011, we had already been through a lot. It wasn't, it was the biggest, it was the biggest phone call in the history of the show, and it's been recounted countless times, especially on the 30 for 30. But that's not what I'm going to remember, Pat, about whenever they finally pull the plug on us here. I'm going to remember those interactions with the callers.
No, there's no question, Paul. And there's so many stories. It comes up so many times, like during the days, with all these different situations that come up, whether it's at Alabama or Auburn, and then you hear a certain caller, it makes you go back to those days that, it seems like yesterday, and it was so long ago. So many things have changed, especially in the state of Alabama when it comes to football. That's for sure.
Well, Pat, thank you. We're going to have to do this again because we really didn't even touch half the stories, and we'll include the audience the next time. But thanks so much for being here on a Friday night, and we will talk to you very soon. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, Paul. Anytime. My best to Linda.
You got it. Same to Leanne. We have had a great time. We will see you Monday. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.